So, again, we're at the end of Perek Vav. We started the Perek, I guess this is now part four for this Perek, so we started the Perek three shiurim ago, talking about the beginning, the Malach's conversation with Yehoshua, and whether this is part of it or not, but the instructions that Yehoshua gets to have the nation go around the city for 6 days, and then on the seventh day they will blow the shofar. They may have blown the shofar the other days as well. That part is not clear in terms of shofar on the first 6 days, but they blow the shofar on day seven, and that's what they do. And they're led by the Kohanim. We talked about the role of the Kohanim. We talked about the different ways to look at the events in Yericho. Do we look at it as simply a military conquest? Do we look at it as a religious event because of the role of the Aron? Do we look at it as a new Bereshis for this nation where they're going around 6 days, and then on the seventh day they're actually going to conquer the city, paralleling Shabbos? And in fact, the Medrash says that the seventh day was Shabbos. So we went through all of that. We saw the wall collapse and discussed why Hashem would specifically have the wall collapsed as the means of conquering the city. And then we saw the statement that the city shall be put into a form of cherem, in the sense that no one gets to use the spoils. The spoils have to be off limits except for the metal, which will go to the Mishkan. That will be used for Hashem, and we talked about that idea of the kalim of idolatry being used now for God. And that brings us to what may be thought of as the epilogue to the story, in Pasuk Chaf Vav, sentence 26. We have the last two psukim in the parak to finish. Vayashba Yehoshua ba'es hahi lemor arur ha'ish lifnei Hashem asher yakum. Actually, I'm sorry, that's right. Asher yakum ubana es ha'ir hazos es Yericho, bivchoro yasdena ubitziro yatziv delaseha. Yehoshua takes an oath. Vayashba, really, he makes the nation take an oath. He declares it on their behalf, saying, Arur, cursed is the person before God, if he will do the following. The person who will rise and build this city, Yericho. With his firstborn, he will establish it, and with his youngest, Yatziv Delaseha, he will establish the doors of the city. And then the parak concludes, Vayi Hashem es Yehoshua, God was with Yehoshua, as demonstrated in the parak, Vayi Shamo b'chol ha'aretz, and word of Yehoshua spreads throughout the land. What is weird about Pasuk Chav Vav, about sentence 26? What is strange in this Pasuk? What do you mean?
With his firstborn and put up the doors with his youngest.
Right. So that's a curse. And what he's fundamentally saying is that whoever does this is going to lose his children. When he starts, he'll lose the firstborn, and so on down to when he does the doors, which is the end. At that point, he loses the youngest. It's an incredibly harsh curse. We don't have, as far as I can recall, an analogous case in Tanakh. This stands on its own. But what else is...
It seems like a non sequitur. It seems like out of place almost. Like the story, and then the next pasuk tie in the story, and this kind of seemed a little bit out of place to me.
Okay. Meaning it wasn't decreed at the start. It wasn't in the instructions for the water.
Yeah, Hashem did tell them this. They tell the story, everything happens, and it says at the end, Hashem's with Yeshua, everything's great, and then this kind of in the middle.
Right. So one key question is this an add-on? Like, Yehoshua just thought of this now. Is this part of what he was instructed to do? Is this his own invention? Do you see anything in the pasuk that would give you a clue as to whether he's inventing this?
What it said, it says that Hashem was with him, agreed with, like, right, so two things.
Right? Baita he would tell you what?
Unless
you're going to say Vayashba Yehoshua Vayitahi, as opposed to making the declaration earlier, he waited until it was all over and then he did it.
Right, but those could just be more spontaneity, you know?
Right, so two things. Alina mentions that he says, cursed is the one before God. So that could just be standard language. Or it could be, this isn't my thing, this is God's thing. Ruth points out that the next pasuk says, Hashem is with Yehoshua. Now, you could take that as I did when I read it, which is it's reflecting in general that Hashem was with Yahushua. Or you could look at it and say it's following the immediately preceding verse. God goes along with, whether this was what God instructed him or not, it's in God's name and God is okay with it. It's hard to tell. There are a few other things about the language here that are interesting. I think the Ba'esa, he is interesting, that Leva points out. I'm not sure what to do with it. The statement of Ha'ir Hazos Es Yericho. Why do you need that? Is there anyone at this point, after the walls have collapsed and you just overran the city, is there anyone who thinks you're referring to another city if you just say Yericho or if you just say Ha'ir Hazos?
Maybe it's implying that this is only for this one time. It's not a general time when we go on to capture other places.
So it's to exclude future conquests.
Yes.
Okay, could be. I just think that it's an odd thing.
Or it's this city, or Yericho, if you want to take it somewhere else. I mean, it's both. I don't want to know Yericho, and I don't want to know this city. I mean,
so in other words, don't build Jericho, Long Island?
Maybe.
Jewish developers should not build cities elsewhere that are called Yericho.
Maybe it's not Yericho, but a city like Yericho.
The wall city.
Maybe not the wall city.
Oh, boy. Then he had to say something about building walls, because he didn't say anything.
No, but it could be...
What if he just builds, the inside?
The gates.
The
restaurant, the casino.
Or take away some of the... whatever remains and move it somewhere else and use it again to rebuild.
So in other words, you need to take the materials somewhere. Well, the materials have already been...
I don't know if they're totally destroyed.
But they were already declared off limits.
You already said no one should use the materials.
The other question is why? Where did this come from? You're supposed to be settling the land.
Doesn't some of this almost seem like overzealous? Kind of adding on all these extra things that don't really...
Right. Well, I don't know what over would be, because I don't know what the threshold ought to be. But it does sound like yet another step in distancing them from Yericho. I'm already telling them don't use the spoils for the reasons that we discussed last time. Now I'm also telling them not only should you not use the spoils, you also may never build up this city. Don't build anything on this spot.
Well, sometimes you have to start out really harsh. It's kind of like your first kid as opposed to your last kid, right? You're very strict and you have to set the law and you have to make sure that people really understand there's a framework and how they need to behave. And later on, maybe they will be able to take spoils and maybe they will be able to rebuild or whatever to inhabit it. But right now, we're laying down the law.
I have a conversation with your kids.
You can't leave any room for error sometimes in the beginning of their new path of conquering and it's going to go on.
Is it more a spiritual thing?
Did their kids die? Who built it?
That's part of what we want to get to.
Isn't this more of a spiritual thing that they're saying, the people of Yericho were so bad, we don't want to recreate anything like that again?
Yeah, I mean,
just the physical tap city, it's the type of city that it was.
Well, in that case, he has to say so. Because his language, when he says, this city, Yericho, it's sort of like Yaakov's failed attempt to tell Lava he wants to marry Rachel Bitra Haktana, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so much for that. But theoretically, he was being very specific.
No, that's what I'm saying. But this city, Yericho, it was such an evil city, we don't want to recreate this again.
Maybe. And that certainly can be a justification for it. It's just really strange. And it's strange because we believe in settling the land. That's what they're there for, right? I'm taking the first land and actually putting it off limits. I mean, there are all sorts of practices when you move later in Jewish history to the time of the Gemara that are meant to ensure that they will build up land and that they will do Yishuv Haaretz and that they will not neglect it. This is odd. The whole thing is very strange.
Or is it just as an example to say, that's going to be left as an example to everybody else? This is what's going to happen to you if you don't?
Maybe. Well, two ways that I've seen for looking at this. I haven't really seen the idea of it being an example, but I think that's interesting. You know, sort of send a message, yeah. But take a look at Devarim Yud Gimel Yud Zayin 13:17. We mentioned this last time, but since last time was before Rosh Hashanah, you're not responsible for it.
You mean you think we might have forgotten?
It won't be on the final. Page 462, thanks. This, when we read it last time we saw, is from the instructions for the year Hanidachat. Remember that one way to look at Yericho, and the instruction not to take from the spoils in general, was to compare it to the year Hanidachat, the city which everybody worships idols, has no redeeming features whatsoever, not even a mezuzah in it, and that city is leveled, and you don't get anything from it. And take a look at what the Torah says there. There are three key words in the Hebrew. The last three words in the sentence. Lo tibane, od. It shall never be built again. So one way to look at what's happening with Yericho is that this is an extension of the idea that it's an Ir Hanidacha. This is the city with no redeeming value. Remember that when we talked about the whole ethnic cleansing question, we explained that God looks at this society and says they become so corrupt, so evil in every which way that I can't have them in my land. This is what an Ir Hanidachat is. And so what we're seeing here is a function of that way of looking at the city. Lo tibane od, it shall not be rebuilt. That's one way to look at it. Then there's another way to look at it, though. If you take a look on your sheets, it's source number 2. Rambam in Mora HaNevuchim, Guide of the Perplexed. He writes, Hecherim Yehoshua Misha Yivne Yericho La'olam Le'yos Hamofes Ahu Kayam Omeid. Yehoshua declared a cherem, and the word cherem again is a sort of malleable word, but here I would say it's in the sense of destruction, upon one who would rebuild Yericho. That's an interesting translation that I did. That should say Yericho. Yeah, that's someone who's writing too quickly. Misha Yericho le'olam, one who would rebuild Yericho ever, li'yos hamofes hahu kayam omid, so that the miracle would stand forever, would endure. Ki chol misha yir'eh chama hahish gu'a ba'aretz, one who would see the wall sunken into the ground, yis ba'erlo, she'ein zet chunat binyan she'neheras. You'd understand, that's not the way buildings collapse. Aval nishkab the mofet, rather the wall sunk miraculously.
So why not to say that? Why not say we're going to leave this as an oat? Like, why say we're not going to touch it? Why don't you just say we're going to leave it? Like,
right. Not only that, ask another question. You're right, but ask a second question along the same lines.
Yeah. So leave it.
Leave the wall.
Yeah. It's like I don't know, all the stones that were left wherever they were left.
Right. Like, you have stones of the Yarden.
Yes. Right. So you leave it for what it is, and then you move on.
Right. I think the Rambam has a problem with the idea that we're leaving just random devastation in the land when we have these mitzvahs of settling the land. And so the Rambam is offering a different solution. The Rambam's solution has its own weakness, which is the Pasuk didn't say that. Sort of. I mean, it may have said it. You could sort of see it. That's the way the Rambam looks at it.
The Pasuk makes it sound like we don't want to rebuild the city because of the flaws of the city, not we don't want to rebuild because we want to leave this to show what happened. It's two different goals.
Right. It's entirely different. But what is there in the pasuk that does lead you in this direction? There's something in the pasuk that does lead in this direction. Look at the language of the curse. What's going to happen to the person who does this? He's going to lose the kids, right? But it emphasizes the foundation and the doors. It sounds like he's talking gates of the city. You know, the wall that surrounds the city. So there is that. The weakness is he also says Ir Hazos, which sounds like it's the whole city. It's not just about the wall. I could read the Rambam, and we're going to come back to this idea in a little bit. I could read the Rambam to actually say that the curse is against building the wall. And that's it. You can put whatever you want inside. just don't build the wall of the city. Let the wall remain as a sign for everybody to remember.
That's not what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says here.
Correct. Correct. It's a problem. I mean, everybody's wrestling with this problem of why do this? And so they're offering different suggestions for justifying it. It is interesting that I think the third idea is an interesting one, the idea that it's a message to Canaan, I think has merit also. I just haven't seen it brought. So the question that you then need to ask is, whatever your motivation is this in fact Yoshua's invention? The psukim do make it sound like it's him, and it's him coming in at the end, and Bahi Sahi, now that everything is over, okay, by the way, I'm throwing this in. Abarbanel disagrees. Much like Abarbanel's comment regarding leaving the spoils and not touching the spoils, where he said, yeah, Yoshua had been told this, he does the same thing here. If you take a look at source number 3, he says, Va'ach Shov, he says, I would think, Shegam Zeh HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tziva Alav, that God instructed him for this as well. When Hashem said, this is holy ground. The place is cherem, and everything in it is cherem. So the idea is that it's part of the sanctity of the location, which is a whole different way of looking at it, really, because I suppose that means that Abarbanel is giving us a fourth explanation for why you're not rebuilding it. Right? It's the Kedusha of the spot. It's too holy. This is a place where a miracle was done. You can't just build your house there. Which then goes back to the conquest being on Shabbos and other aspects of the holiness that we already discussed, that we talked about last time. But that would be another way to look at it, I suppose, is that the place is too kodesh for billing. And that would, for building. And that would go along with the idea in the pasuk of Arur HaIsh Lifnei Hashem. Cursed is the one before God who does this. So that's what Yoshua does. He says, don't rebuild it, for whatever reason we've given. Whether he's inventing this on his own, which is the way it sounds, or whether it's from Hashem, which is what Abarbanel says, and it was just built into the original conversation with the Malach. But the big question actually comes in the Pesukim I noted for you in source number 4, for which you'll need your Tanakh. Malachim Aleph, Perek Tet Zayin. This is only part one of the problem. Part two of the problem is coming. Perek Ted Zion, Psukim Lamed Gimel Lamed Dalet. Someone could read that out? Read the English, is fine. 852?
Sorry, which
pasuk? Lamed Gimel 33.
You want us to read the
pasuk?
Yeah, if someone could read it out loud.
Oh, in Hebrew or in
English, please.
I guess it's Achav. Achav made an Asherah tree, and Achav did more to anger Hashem, God of Israel, than all the kings of Israel that preceded him. In his days, Chiel Beit Ha'eli built up Jericho. With the death of Abiram, his firstborn, he laid its foundations. With the death of Segub. His youngest, he installed its doors. Yeah, write the word of Hashem that he had spoken through the hand of Joshua.
Thank you.
Wow. I don't know.
But it's not.
Who says it's not?
Well, how do they know it's from Hashem? It doesn't say that originally.
Right, except that pasuk is clearly reading it the way that Abarbanel did, this is from God. Right, so that supports Abarbanel's idea. But the curse comes true, right? For this fellow Chiel, Beit El, who is building up the...
Do they not know about the curse?
Or he's the contractor?
Why did say Achav? Achav did more to anger Hashem, and then it's talking about this other guy, Chiel.
Yes, Chiel's just the builder. Chiel is the contractor. Achav is the king. Chiel is the one...
On his instructions.
On his instructions, very much so. This is bizarre on many levels. First of all, does he know about the curse? The assumption tends to be that he does know about the curse.
I think so.
Then once he, even if, he's from Beit El, okay? Beit El is a problem. in the sense that throughout Nach we find idolatry in a place called Beit El, whether it's all the same Beit El or different places. Logically, the name Beit El, House of the Powerful One, is, you know, sort of a generic name for house of worship. So it's not surprising. But the point is, he lives in Idol Central. So fine, he decided to build this thing. But you'd think he'd take a hint. Right? We start building, and this curse is coming
true. How did the first one die? The first year?
Maybe he gets out of the building business.
Yeah. How long after did this happen?
This is in the days of Ahav. So Ahav is, we call it a solid 600, 700 years after.
Oh, yeah, so don't you think that by then they would have thought, well, maybe it doesn't apply anymore?
Yeah, or for the first one. Until the first one goes.
For the king, more than he died.
How not smart is he? I mean, the smart one.
How do we know somebody would even pass, like, it's one thing to pass down the laws and the everything, but just the don't do this, might, you know, like, who would even think of...
Right. I mean, the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah canonize it, have it in Malachim.
Who wrote Malachim?
So, Malachim, we're told, I believe, is Yechezkel and his group. And maybe Yeshaya does. No, but it can't all be that. Maybe Yeshaya does the ending. I don't remember who does. It's Garbo Vavasta, but I'm not remembering specifics. It's written down, though, roughly contemporary to the story. So somebody's remembering this.
Right.
And remembering that there is a curse. Okay. Ahav is the smart one, right? Because he delegated.
Somebody
else do it.
Right. Yeah.
Let's see what happens.
The one
who physically did it. Well, Ahav lost his royal line anyway. That's another story.
But shouldn't he have been punished for it as well?
There's a person physically. Well, isn't it actually Rashi also like an idol worshiper?
Yeah, Ahav's in trouble for many things.
Doing
an idol,
I mean, his whole house gets wiped out.
Yeah, he
just died. Not connected to this story, connected to a different story.
Yeah. But then the other guy, the guy who built it, I mean, he was doing what Ahav says. I mean, you're not going to disobey the king, are you?
Maybe. No, in Ahav's day...
Not exactly the sort of person that you would disobey.
No, in Ahav's day, disobeying Ahav, and more importantly, disobeying his wife, Izebel, was a death penalty.
Exactly.
That's instant death. We know the story of Nabos, his cousin, who had a vineyard, who wanted to keep it, and that doesn't end well. So that's true. You don't really... But
your kids died.
Well, not just that. Like, why didn't he, I don't know, like... fake an accident or something. I can't get myself out of this business. But there's another problem we have to deal with before we deal with that, which is Yehoshua Yud Chet Chav Aleph, 18:21. We're going to list the cities that go to Binyamin. Yud Chet Chav Aleph,
18:21. Why would you want to get it?
The cities of Binyamin. Yericho is first on the list. What's Yericho doing there?
It's
not. It's a city.
But as a city?
It's a city, not a ruin, not a tourist attraction. It's actually a city. And we find it later in Tanakh several different times. I didn't bring you all the Psukim, but you'll find it in Shoftim Aleph Tetzayin. Has the Cani living in a city called Ir HaTamarim, which is another name for Yericho.
Well, maybe it was extended beyond the walls.
If we go across the
walls, then whatever. Right.
Like the wall.
Right. So you're all suggesting solutions, but do we understand the problem?
That is a problem.
Okay.
So we built it, and they
kind of forgot.
Somebody built it.
But that's being maybe just someone has inheritance. What are they going to do with it?
Couldn't it be just the region?
Right. So if you remember, when we started on this parak, I mentioned a paper. By Rabbi Eitan Sandorfi on Yericho and its cursed status versus its holy status. So he actually did some nice work collecting some of the solutions to this problem. One solution is found in a medrash, which is fairly obscure, but it's found in Yalkut Me'am Loes, and he says that the prohibition is building the wall, which fits with the Rambam's idea. Indeed, it was just the wall. Notwithstanding the fact that the Pasuk said, don't build the city, nonetheless, it's the wall. That's one solution. Another solution is found, I brought it for you, in source number... I got the wrong sheet. In source number 6. Pretend number 5 isn't there, if you could. At least till we finish 6 and 7. But source number 6 is a line of the Minchas Chinuch, and I forgot to translate it as I was going through. I'm sorry about that. But the Minchas Chinuch is not actually talking about Yericho at all. He's talking about Ir Hanidachat, the rules of that city that's to be destroyed, and the rule of not building up the city. So the Minchas Chinuch writes, Venera it appears, De'al kol panim, at any rate, Harbe batim ba'inan sheyeh mechuna b'shem Ir. You need many cities for it to be called an ear. Many houses for it to be called an ear, a city. He says, it's not logical to say that if you just build up a house or two, that's called building up the city. The prohibition is building up the city. But then he acknowledges, we don't have any tradition for at what point now it's called you built the city. He says it requires examination until Mashiach comes to explain. But the Menachas Chinuch statement is not made about Yericho. It's a general Ir Hanidachat statement that we can borrow for Yericho and say.
So the you have 5 houses on a block, not 10 houses on a block, and it's not
right.
A city anymore?
Well, he says, I don't know how to give you a number.
That you can't define it, so therefore it can't be classified as building it?
Well, his suggestion is it's not called building it if it's just a a small
garbage truck.
No, it was too far away for it to be destroyed.
Could be my garbage.
So. Okay. The idea, just to say it as he's putting it here, is not I know how many houses.
No, I know.
But there is such a thing as a threshold, and therefore we'll apply it here, is to say that the maybe these earlier settlements were specifically they built up a house here, a house there. They didn't build up the whole thing. Okay. The third idea that we'll bring, Rabbi Sandorfi has quite a few, but the third idea that I'll bring is the Malbim's idea. And the Malbim suggests, and I heard someone say this already before, that it's actually an adjacent community. It's not the original city. What they built up was called Yericho, because everyone called it Yericho, because that was the area. But it actually wasn't Yericho proper. In the same way that we know now, as they do archaeological digs, they find cities near, but not on the site of, the original city that bore that name. When they dig in Israel now, Beit Sha'an isn't at the original Beit Sha'an, it's just slightly off of where the original Beit Sha'an was, and so on. So when we say in Navi...
100 years, too.
Well, no, we're not talking about Chiel. I'm talking about the earlier ones. Mm-hmm. Like the Pasuk in Yehoshua, Perek Yuchet, that says that they have a city in Binyamin called Yericho. So the answer is, yeah, they moved a little bit away, they built it up, but they still called it Yericho because everybody had the road sign still. Like, what are you going to do?
Yes, right.
So if you take a look at source number 7.
This is immediately afterwards.
Yeah. He says, Utchila hika osam bamilchama. First, they defeated them in war. Oh, I'm sorry. I need to give you background on that. Malbim is talking about a separate point. He's dealing with a war that Eglon fights against the Jews, Eglon king of Moab. So it says, Utchila hika osam bamilchama. First he defeated the Jews in war, and then the Pasuk there says that he took Ir HaTamarim, which is a name that we classically associate with Yericho. So he says, Ve'achakach lakach me'itam Ir HaTamarim. Then he took from them this city called Ir HaTamarim. She Yericho haya asur livnosa, because you weren't allowed to build Yericho. Ubanu Ir Etzla, they built a city alongside it. V'laratzu lekora b'shem Yericho, she said gamkin asur. They didn't want to call it Yericho because that's also prohibited, and that takes us back to the language of Yehoshua. Don't build up this city, Yericho. Even the name Yericho is inappropriate. So Bukaru b'shem Ir HaTamarim, so they called it for the city of the dates, al shem HaTamarim shegadlu bav, because of the dates that grew in the city. V'chiel Beit Ha'eli, and as for Chiel from Beit El, Ne'enash al Shabana es Yericho b'mekom Maharishon u'kra'ah b'shem Yericho. He's punished because he broke the rule. He built up the original, and he called it by the original name. Yeah. But that's the idea. What Malbim suggests is that what they built up was actually an adjacent community. What they built up was not Yericho, and therefore they didn't suffer the fate that ultimately Chiel did. So those are three answers, which now you can look at number five, and you can see that that I listed there. But that explains how it's built up before, or how something is built up by that name before Chiel ever gets around to it. But what in the world are Achav and Chiel trying to accomplish? What is their goal in building up this city? There's nowhere for Jews to live, and we need to add 100 housing units, and we're going to do it in Yericho because the UN will be annoyed. Like, what's the...
Well, he was evil. Oh,
come on. But there are all sorts of ways he's evil.
Well, he's putting the Asherah tree, whatever. He's saying, I'm showing you I don't believe in all this.
So one Thursday morning, he wakes up and he says, look, what have I done recently to anger God? I put up an Asherah. In general, I've been supporting idolatry on the land, because that we know. He's the king of the northern kingdom, which is hostile to the southern kingdom and where Yerushalayim is and so on. So, you know, he can check off on his list sort of general, you know, being bad. Maybe he got a cheeseburger, and then he said, like, what am I going to do now? How can I top what I've done? Oh, I know, I'll build Yericho. I find that hard to believe. I think there's something else going on. In fact, Rabbi Sandorfi, in this article, quotes Midrashim that have Achav convincing Chiel not to fear the curse. Like, there's a whole debate. Chiel says, I don't want to do this, and Achav says, don't worry about it, it's old, God isn't powerful anymore, and so on.
Isn't he trying to prove that he's above God?
So this in particular proves that? Well, he can have Chiel try.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he's still something a little bit wary.
Yes. He's going to have the food taster do it. I think we need to look at it differently. I think we need to remember what we saw in the Rambam and his explanation for why you're not supposed to build this up. Right? The Rambam says it is a memorial. It's not about destroying the city. The city's destroyed. It's about saying that no one should forget what happened at Yericho. This is very important to Achav and Chiel. Achav, perhaps more than Chiel as the king, but they're part of a movement. You know what it's like? You've seen the Canaan wines? You ever seen the wines out of Israel that are called Canaan? I always feel very funny. There are two brands of wine that I feel very odd about. One is the Noah wines, and the other is the Canaan wines. There's just something wrong with buying a Noah wine. the other one is the Canaan wines. Remember that we looked at three different ways to understand the conquest of Yericho. One is simply military action, second is that it's a religious act, and third is that this is a new Bereishis. The Jews are coming into their land. It's a brand new creation of the world. 6 days, and then a seventh day. And it was like magic. It's a new Brias HaOlam. Well, if you're Achav, and you are a worshiper of Baal and Asherah, the native gods in the land, what you're trying to do is to roll back the presence of the Jewish God in the land. And this is a major way to do it. You take the memorial of that Shabbos of their entry, you take the memorial for that Bereishis, and you say, gone. I'm going to build it up. We're going to have the original Jericho here once again. We're going to go back to the way things were before the Jews came in. It fits Achav to a T. Remember that Achav marries a woman who apparently is not Jewish. Whether there's ever a conversion in there is a whole other discussion. But she's the daughter of a Canaanite king. He sets up the Canaanite gods. It's all like this is who he is. This is what he's trying to do. This is his personality and its identity. Take a look at source number 9, please. I gave you the Hebrew on one side and the English on the other. This is a medrash which fits very well with it regarding Chiel. Remember the story from Malachim Aleph Perek Yichet about Eliyahu on Har HaKarmel, where there's a showdown where Eliyahu finally says, look, I'm just going to prove to you that God is the real God. I want you to bring all your prophets of the Baal and all your prophets of the Asherah, and we'll have a showdown. They're going to bring a karban, I'm going to bring a karban. whichever one gets fire to come down from heaven, that's clearly the real one. And the other one is dead. That's the showdown, and we know how the story goes. And one question that you learn, that you ask as you learn the story for the first time as a kid, is if the prophets of the Baal know that they've never brought fire down, if they know that this is all just, you know, their sham, why do they agree to this duel? What possessed them to actually enter into this? Is it just like, I dare you? Someone said, I dare you, so therefore you have to now take the dare. They're all 10 years old. Like, why are they going along with it?
God could do it either. There is a God that could do it.
So they figure, neither of us will get fire. But there are 400 of us, and there's only one of him. So we're safe. Maybe. That could be. Maybe they really believe in their system, even though, you know, it's not. Maybe they think it is. Yeah, I knew. I forgot to charge it, so... We got some on the video. I knew that I forgot to charge that. Thanks, but I got the audio. That's another way to look at it. But take a look at this medrash. You learned this medrash at some point, probably. It's an obscure medrash. It's found in an appendix to Devarim Rabbah in the Lieberman edition of Devarim Rabbah. So. Why it wasn't in the original, where it was found, what manuscript, I don't actually know. But it goes this way. Kedaber Ephraim Reseis. They quote a pasuk from Hosea, towards the end of Hosea. When Ephraim spoke, there was trembling. So Amru Zal, sages said, Davar zeh lo nibei hanavi ela al chiel. That Hosea said this pasuk of, when Ephraim spoke, there was trembling, he said it about chiel. Shahaya Adam Gadol Va'ashir, Vahaya Aviv Mishevet Ephraim. Because Chiel was a mighty and wealthy person, he is a contractor after all to the king, and his father was from Shevet Ephraim. Ukshara Masa Afa Bashar Histo, so Izebel Basi Ubal Ishto. When he saw what Achav was getting into in terms of his idolatry in general, as Kafar Bakarish Baruch, he dropped God, he said, you know what? I see the way the wind is blowing. The king has gone over to idolatry. He's doing well. He's prospering. Leave aside this whole Jewish God thing. Ubataras Moshe. He dropped Torah. Ubana umasar atzmo la'avodah zarah. He built up and gave himself to idolatry. Which idolatry? The idolatry she'asta Izebel b'rosh hara Carmel. The idolatry that existed on Mount Carmel. K'dei l'hach Yisraelio shai mispal lefnei Hashem b'hara Carmel. And his... What he wanted to do was to anger Elio, because Elio used to daven on Har Carmel. So here you have this new temple for idolatry set up, and he says, that's where I'm going. That's what I'm going to build, that's where I'm going to worship. Well, they then get to the showdown. When Elio comes to Achav for this test, the prophets of the Baal knew that Baal wasn't capable of producing fire. He takes that they knew that wasn't in their God's repertoire. Ma'asa Chiel. So what does Chiel do? Amad neged nevi'ei ha-Baal. He stands up before these prophets of Baal. Ba'amar lem, and he says to them, Hischaz ku v'imdu neged Elio. Be strong, stand against Elio. V'ani e'eseh lahem davar k'mos sha'Baal shaleh lachem ish. I'll make it look like Baal is sending fire. How are you going to do that? Ma'asa, what did he do? Lakach shnei avanim biyado. He took two stones. Una'ores pishtan, as well as some flax. V'nichnas b'me'ei ha'bal. And he entered into the statue that they had of the Baal of Neshayach Halul, because it was hollow. V'yikishba avanim zelazeh. And he strikes the rocks against each other. K'dei lahadlik hana'ores, in order to kindle the flax. Miyad hirgish Elio b'ruach ha'kodesh. But don't worry, Elio has divine inspiration, and he realizes what's going on. V'amar lefanav, and he declares before God, Ribono Shalola, Master of the Universe, Bakasha Gedola Bikashti Mimcha Ve'asisa. You know, I've asked you for pretty big things in the past. I asked you to Sheishabta Ruchosha Ben Atzarfit, when the child died and he prayed to God to bring the child back to life, God did it. V'achshav ani mevakesh mimcha, and then this next word is odd. I think it's an artifact of the manuscript, and it's not accurate, but I don't know what to do with it, so I just left it in. Ani mevakesh mimcha shegais oso rasha b'me'ei ha'bal. What I want you to do now, God, is take away the soul from the one who is standing inside the Baal. And miyad tziva kadosh baruch hu l'nachash v'nashacho ba'akeva umeis. And God sends a snake, it bites Chiel, and he dies. You've heard this story before. You've heard this medrash before. V'zeh shamar akasuv. And where in the world do you get this idea from? Remember that, and this is a point I repeat endlessly. Medrash is never in a vacuum. Medrash is always building on something in a pasuk somewhere. It's an ear for language that the Medrash is building on. Here, it's building on a pasuk in Amos, which talks about the people God is going to punish, and it says, "Im yechbe'u barosh har karmel." If they hide atop Har Karmel, there I'm going to find them and I'm going to get them. Which is a very odd thing. That pasuk in a vacuum is difficult to understand, because you don't hide atop a mountain. On a mountain, you're on display. Right? That's the place for the showdown, remember? You don't hide atop Har Carmel. So his answer is, it's referring to this story, and so you end up connecting that. But the point is that Chiel is portrayed here in this Medrash as somebody who has gone over to the side of the Baal and wants to Baalize, if you will, the land. And he is going to give himself for this purpose. And remember, this is when he dies. So the Medrash is seeing this is happening after he's already built up Yericho and lost all his kids.
He's the one inside?
Yeah, that's what it said. Chiel is the one who goes, that was his plan.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So the idea here is that Chiel is not only corrupt personally, but he's trying to corrupt others. That's his goal.
And he obviously didn't believe that the reason his sons died was because he built Yericho.
Either that, or he's of the showdown school. Right? Remember in Egypt how they keep saying, well, our God is going to be greater than your God. Our God can do miracles, your God can do miracles, but our God is greater. You know, there is a school of thought that says that there are multiple gods, and your God can do certain things, my God can do certain things, but mine is going to be greater than yours. And Chiel says, well, fine, you know, I may have suffered for, you know, maybe your God struck my family, but my God is still going to come through for this. The difficulty is, then why didn't he think that his God can bring fire? Unless his God's a water God or something, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's very hard to put your mind into where their mind is in terms of things like this. It's so foreign to us. But take a look at the pasuk that I brought you in source number 10, because this to me seals the deal in understanding what's going on at Har Carmel. Melachim Aleph Perek Yud Ches, pasuk Lamed. Chapter 18, sentence 30. You also noted on the source before that I brought you from the beginning of Pasuk and Amos. In the beginning of that passage, he talks about God standing atop an altar. That's another connection to what happens on Har Carmel. But in source number 3, I'm sorry, source number 3, source number 10, the Pasuk and Melachim Aleph, that's when Eliyahu is preparing his carbon, right? What does Eliyahu do?
He
brings it. He uses an old mizbeach. Instead of building a new mizbeach for this big showdown to impress everybody, he specifically builds an old mizbeach. Mm-hmm. His point is to establish life of Jews in the land of Israel, and to say this is a Jewish land. And therefore, I am not a newcomer. We've been worshiping here all along. And in fact, there's actually a history. The Midrashim and the commentaries to that pasuk talk about what Mizbeach this was beforehand. I'm blanking now. I think it had something to do with Shaul, actually. It was Shaul's Mizbeach. But the point is that Eliyahu on Har Carmel represents Jewish Israel. And he represents, Achav and his crew represent Baal and Canaan. And that's what the showdown is really about. And that's what building up Yericho is about. This is an attempt to roll back Jewish life and to turn it into Canaan all over again. So that, to summarize the themes that we saw in the parak, and I gave it to you on the sheet as well, we saw the layers of the conquest of Yericho as just a military assault, a service of God, a recreation of the world. We saw the collapsing of the walls as a statement that no fortress will be safe, or perhaps a message about walled cities, which we discussed in some detail. The decision of Cherem is either echoing Ir HaNidachat, which has to be destroyed and you don't get the spoils, or it's a statement of we won't benefit from the miracle, and we had various permutations of that. It's their first conquest and like a tithe, or it was Shabbos when the walls fell and they didn't want to benefit from what was done on Shabbos, and so on. And then finally, the idea that the city shall never be rebuilt is a statement that Bereshit will not be reversed. The conquest that we did will never be rolled back. That's the idea. Clear? Okay. So